So the idea of this talk actually was Gautamji's. He came and he shared an experience when we were returning from Dharamshala, that there are many cases of spontaneous Kundalini awakening that he's getting aware of. And there's a big taboo around the topic of Kundalini. Especially if one searches online, you will hear different schools of thought and different ideas and fear mongering and all sorts of things that one can find online. And the idea of having a joint talk with Kumar also came from the fact that Kumar also had a spontaneous Kundalini awakening. I don't know if you've taken the book or if you've read the book. Kumar has shared his experience of spontaneous Kundalini awakening and how he dealt through it, with the grace of the Guru and the teaching of Advaita. I had a similar case. So today's talk is going to be around Kundalini and Advaita and how one looks at the two through the lens of the end goal that we seek. My spontaneous Kundalini awakening actually happened when I was just 6 years old. It started with a near-death experience, actually, out-of-body experience. But I was going through a phase of illness. And one day, while I was lying down, running very high fever, my parents were sitting next to me. And I could feel slipping away. And at that point of time, I saw myself floating in the air, and I could see my body on the bed and my parents surrounding my body. And I was like, hang on, what's happening here? So slowly and slowly, I saw myself going up and up. And then I heard a voice. There were a few figures. And one of the voices, one of the person who was speaking to me was my grandfather, who just passed away a year and a half back. And he said, "It's not your time yet. Go back." So I woke up and suddenly I was again back in the body. And of course, the treatment happened and I recovered. But what followed was a series of experiences. And this is, I'm talking about, I was born in Srinagar. It's a very cold place. Winters, it can get really cold. And normally you don't find snakes there. But what used to happen was I could feel that there were snakes everywhere, under the bed, on the sofa. I was scared to even go to the washroom because I thought the snake would come from anywhere, even in the pipes. And then what followed was a series of nightmares, dreams, where I felt that I was getting locked down in a very dark cave. And every day I could see someday my uncle, not from this life, but probably previous life, would come and shut the door of the cave. And that continued. So my family thought that I was going cuckoo in the head, so they called different priests and everything else, but nothing worked. And then I returned to the path of bhakti yoga. I mean, I did not take anything, it was all spontaneous. And one of the things that I used to do was to walk up to a temple on a hill, which was a walk of about 4 or 5 kilometers every day. irrespective of the weather, irrespective of the season. And now in hindsight, I think I started participating in daily life and the experience settled down after a year and a half. Now cut to 30 years later, we had just moved back to India after living abroad for 15 years. And my wife was a student of Gautamji's mother, Santosh Ma, and she was actually taking a course. And I just happened to sit in one of the courses with Guruji's mother, actually, Gautamji's mother. And I started to feel a connection. But more importantly, I started to feel the same energy rising up again. So this time around, I thought, let me understand what's happening and let me do the course, because something is happening in the body and I'm feeling it. So thus began my conscious journey of Kriya Yoga, which is, the technique is 8 spiritual breaths that we follow. It's under the lineage of Guruji and Santosh Ma. And it has its roots in the Tibetan tradition of Guru Dingle Meji. So it's a practice where you do Kriya Yoga, you do breaths, and there's a breath for each chakra. So there are 7 chakras, there are 108 chakras, but the 7 main chakras in human body, they start with Muladhara, which is at the base of the spine. Then you have Swadhisthana, which is just below the navel and just above the base of spine. And then you have Manipur Chakra, which is the solar plexus. Then you have Anahat, which is the heart chakra, the spiritual heart. Then you have Vishuddhi, which is the throat chakra. Agya, which is between the eyebrows. And then Sahasrara, which is the crown chakra, which is just above the head. Now, what is a chakra? And I had no clue of all of this when I started 4 years back. Human body, as Gautamji has been saying, it is a physical and subtle body combination where there are nerves, nadis as we call them. They are so subtle, they are thinner than a single strand of hair. And they go across the body and they carry the energy. That this is the same energy that allows us to do our daily living and functioning. Now the 3 main nadis in the human body are Ida, which is the left nervous system, the left nerve, the Sushumna, which is the central nerve that goes through the spine, and the Pingla, which is the right channel. So what normally happens is these nerves, they crisscross each other at different chakras, as I mentioned. And that's where the chakras are basically nothing but the key points in the human body where all the nadis, the nerves come together, the nervous system comes together. And that's what creates a chakra. So normally, if you look at it, Kundalini is associated with a serpent, a mother divine. And why is it called a serpent? Because when it's dormant, the energy lies at the Muladhara chakra, the base chakra as we call it. When it rises through a free-flowing system, it has to rise through Sushumna, but also through Ida and Pingla. And now imagine a double helix, right? Those are the Ida and Pingla. When they crisscross, when the energy flows like this, that's what gives an appearance of a snake-like movement in the body. Now, each chakra has its elements. Muladhara is associated with the earth element, Swadhisthana with the water element, Manipur with the fire element, so on and so forth. So for me, as I started to do the practice, I started to feel the rise, the ascension of the energy back again after 30 years. But this time, it was not as traumatic as it was in the first instance, where it was a spontaneous awakening. This time, I could feel the energy in different parts of the body and I could understand what's really happening. And thanks to Santosh Ma, I could also relate to the experiences whenever I had trouble. And there are challenges. And why are there challenges? We'll talk about it. But when I used to go through those experiences, like somebody was drilling on my brain, and I saw one day that my brain was cut open. Literally, it was open and somebody was scraping something and then they put it back and they stitched it. Those are the kind of experiences one had. You know, you see the nerves are twitching, suddenly you have your arms are moving, you feel something crawling in the body. Those are the kind of experiences you have. But if you've never experienced anything like this, if it happens to anybody, people get scared. Now, there are many practices of Kundalini awakening. And as I said, on the internet, you'll find many techniques. And that's where it gets very dangerous. So the system that we follow is what we call as the descending path, where we bring the solar energy down through the practice of the breaths. So there are 8 breaths. Each breath is followed by an affirmation for that corresponding chakra and that breath. You bring the breath down, you clear the system. You clear the subtle body, the nadis, so that when the Kundalini rises, there are no blockages. So the experience are nothing but the Kundalini pushing through the blockages. And that's what creates experience. So I wanted to pause here and move to Kumar, because he'll share the kind of experiences he had when he had a spontaneous Kundalini awakening.
Yes. So like he rightly pointed out, too many experiences have nothing to do with spiritual advancement per se. The more you feel the energy and have these experiences, it is basically the cleansing of blockages. I had a very traumatic childhood. I was bullied, right? So there was a lot buried under the surface. And I was never looking for a Kundalini awakening. I loved reading Bhagavad Gita. I loved reading the scriptures and contemplating on them. I had a poor eyesight, so I just wanted to see ways I could improve it. And I came across Tratika, which is a gazing practice. I used to watch the candle flame and gaze at it intently. Now, what happened was that practice awakened this energy. I felt throbbing sensations on the third eye, and it was an unleashing of a force which was so strong. And at that time, I had no guidance. And in that ignorance, there was reading of books, just seeing techniques randomly from books and trying to experiment. And that process just became worse because of that. A, because there was ego trying to control a process. That very energy has created the world. The one which controls everything, you try to control that, you are in trouble. B, there was no support of a guru. And there was no surrender. The guru field is of immense significance. Because initially, when the process unfolds, the experiences can be so overwhelming that the same force, which is verily the self, and which is for spiritual evolution, you go in fear mode. But once you trust the guru, who is the embodiment of Shakti, verily the self, that very surrender makes the process very gentle. Because that surrender and the guru came later, 3 years later of going through this, every time I tried to manipulate with Bij mantras from books, techniques, I had nights where the energy would rage. There would be insomnia. all the flashbacks from the childhood came up. All those years they were buried, they never showed up. But after the awakening of this energy is to cleanse that blockages, right? And everything came up. But because there wasn't surrender in place and fear and ego was taking precedence, there were experiences like insomnia, unbearable heat, listening to inner sounds, then visions of all kinds, scary and also some saintly visions, extrasensory perception opening up. And because there wasn't surrender in the system and not enough guidance, the ego taking precedence, a feeling of being special when abilities like seeing auras came up, right? Abilities like tuning into people's energies came up, right? But these abilities per se will not lead you to truth. If somebody is very grounded in the guru field and there is no specialness, obviously these abilities can help people. But in my case, because I was so raw, immature, and the system had so many blockages, the subtle system was definitely not clear. The ego took control, and there was a feeling of being special. And whenever the ego takes precedence, the same energy, which is the self, the bliss, will rage. So, all kinds of these experiences, like seeing auras, hearing subtle sounds, past traumas coming up, kriyas. Now, kriyas are these involuntary movements which come up when the energy moves through the subtle system. My body would spontaneously sway, my head would go back in meditation. It was a force which seemed so difficult in the beginning because there was such need to control.
So, is Kundalini then scary? I don't think it is. It is how it stumbles upon in one's life, how you find it. There are many paths, and the biggest mistake I have heard people do is mixing up of different paths. Because the way in which Kundalini gets activated, so it is active in almost everybody that you know, because at the end of the day, it is a life force. If you're running and walking and jumping, you need life force. You need prana shakti. So it is there, but it's coiled at the base of the spine. Now, what happens is people mix different practices. Somebody, you find a video on YouTube about chakra meditation, you do that. You don't know what's really happening on inside the body. It is like electricity. When you switch on the switch, right? When you turn on the switch, you see that the light bulb illuminates. You don't see the electricity, but you know it is there. It's running. So same way, the energy is there. When we try and mix and match from one system and one lineage, we do one meditation for one chakra and do kriya for another one, and then we go in another place. That's why what they say is you should not mix practices, especially in kriya yoga. Because one could be working on a descending energy path where you want to bring this solar energy and clear the chakras. And then you use the earth energy to bring the Kundalini Shakti up. But for that, your path has to be clear. Now imagine if you do descending energy first, and then in between you mix it with ascending energy. The biggest problem occurs when Kundalini, instead of going in the Sushumna, in the Ida and the Pingala at the right pace, it starts to go into different systems, different nadi systems. Not only does it create havoc in your body and mind, but also at an organ level. And Why is that? Because each of the chakras, the way they operate, they not only are a part of the energy field, but they also have a correlation with a body organ. Agya is directly correlated with your eyesight. Yes, it is the third eye, which means when it's open, you have access to universal wisdom and universal consciousness. Manipura, which is the solar plexus, is what we call in Hindi Jataragni. It's the divine fire. It's also the lower mind. So there is that crisscross which happens, and that's what actually creates problem. Kundalini in itself is not harmful. Actually, the positive side of Kundalini is once you are able, under a good, able guru who has himself or herself had the practice of it, the experience of it, once you are guided by it, the benefits can be immense. Not just from a spiritual perspective, but even from a physical perspective. You know, once your throat chakra opens up or your heart anahata opens up, you truly feel the universal unconditional love. And that's where the similarity between the Kundalini and Advaita comes into play. The benefits are immense. Once your Agya opens up, suddenly you are thinking at the speed of light. Right? And you will see benefits in day-to-day life coming through. Even before a problem is presented, you will see that you're processing like a supercomputer. But again, it's the same conversation about morning. Is AI a bane or a boon? It's how one goes about it. Now, I wanted to talk more about the similarities between Kundalini and Advaita, and then, of course, it's important also to hear how did Kumar overcome the challenges which he had, and some of the things. If one is not used to it, you know, constant headaches, sleepless nights, you feel your body's on fire, it's burning, you feel something is going up your spine, in your arms, suddenly there's twitching, your hands are moving like this. How do you deal with it? And how did you deal with it, Kumar?
I think it was just the grace of Gautamji and the Guru Parampara. I remember I used to have these needle-like painful pricking sensations in my throat for years before meeting Gautamji. And once in an online satsang, I asked him, how do I make it relieved faster? What can I do to control the blockage? He just said, this is ego coming from the back door. Let it resolve. And it resolved beautifully. In another instance, I had these flashbacks of childhood bullying dreams. And I said, I'm fed up. I want them to stop. He said, your need for them to stop is what is making them persist. And the day I relaxed and accepted it, very soon those dreams stopped surfacing. So his Advaita teachings basically were like my lifeline because those teachings are very valid for the Kundalini process. Just like he taught to take every situation, whether pleasant or unpleasant, and accept it as the will of divine. Similarly, every experience, no matter how blissful, it will pass, it is not permanent, and any unpleasant experience, so to speak, these are labels of the mind, will also pass. So this whole concept of surrendering, that time it was a concept, but it becomes very real by the Guru's grace. Those experiences started to mellow down, and all these traumatic or the relatively difficult or challenging experiences of Kundalini blossomed, like he beautifully said, into love, into surrender, into devotion. LSD, love, surrender and devotion. And people are very stuck around experiencing sensations, and seeing visions and wanting to figure where they are. The mind wants to figure how evolved it is, at what chakra you are operating. That's again the ego mind coming, and that will just disturb the process. Let the mind not interfere in the process. And there was a joint satsang with Gautamji and Santosh Ma, and I asked Santosh Ma and Gautamji, I have this buzzing sound in my ear. It's always there. When I tune into it, it brings peace. Is it tinnitus or is it really something spiritual? And Santosh Ma just looked at me straight in the eye. How can you doubt your experience? Anytime the mind rationalization, intellectualization would happen, that means it's all in the head. You are not surrendering. Allow it to happen. Trust, faith, and surrender make this process nectarine. And Kundalini, awakening itself, has nothing to do with evolution if it is not guided in the right way by the guru, by surrender. It can take you into space of ego, spiritual ego, very strong spiritual ego. And if a lot of experiments like psychedelics, random techniques from books are done, one can even end up in psychiatric conditions. But now that guidance is there of the Guru Parampara, all this didn't happen then. And surrender is not just touching the feet of the Guru and bowing down outside. It is taking the Guru's instruction to the heart. The Guru's field stabilizes the Kundalini process. You don't need to do anything. You just need to be in that field. And all is taken care of. And for me, when there were times when it became felt difficult, I physically did a prostration, Shashtang Namaskar, at the altar, which had Gautamji's photo and the Guru Parampara. So you have to train the system to bow down to the Guru, the Shakti, which is essentially one. And then that physical act would eventually, by grace, turn into what surrender actually is.
So if you ask any guru who's experienced any form of enlightenment, whether it's on the Kriya Yoga path or on the Advaita path or on the Bhakti Yoga path, everybody will tell you only one thing. At the end of the day, the end goal for everybody is the same, is the realization of the self. In Kundalini, why is there so much focus on getting the Kundalini to rise? What's the end goal? Is it enlightenment? Our Guruji says, what happens after enlightenment? What is moksha? She said, it's a boring place. You'll get bored there. What will you do when you get enlightened? In order to live this life in which we are born and in the physical being that we are in, the key goal, whether you go take the Kriya Yoga path or the Advaita path, is only one. In Kundalini, it is you want the Kundalini to rise to your Sahasrara, but the objective is that your left brain and the right brain hemispheres both work in synchronicity, which means there's no thinking mind. It all becomes one. So the right brain basically grows, not physically, but its influence grows and it takes over the left brain. So you're not thinking, as Gautamji was saying today also, you're not thinking from your left brain. Every situation that you face in your day-to-day life, you're not responding from your past condition. You're not reacting. You respond. And that can only happen once your consciousness has risen. So that's the end goal of Kundalini. And that's also where Advaita is the same. It's when you start being a witness to whatever is happening in life, It's also a misconception that Kundalini is lot of doing, that you have to do Kriya and its physical activity. Yes, it is. But so is Advaita. You have to be in the constant state of awareness. It is tapa. It is that practice where you have to be conscious and aware. And watch your thoughts. In fact, in the practice that we have, while the practice of breath work is physical activity, but all the affirmations are there so that you could reach out to the unconscious mind and reduce the chatter of the mind so that it becomes one. You realize that there is no difference. And I read one of the affirmations goes like this: I and the Creator are one. The Creator is right here, right in the heart of me. And this is not the physical heart, but it's a spiritual heart, which is slightly located to the right side, about a hand's distance away from your physical heart. Right here in the heart of me. Right here in the mind of me. Right here in the being of me. I and the Creator are one. Basically, the idea of all practices is to dissolve the difference between the I and the me. These are different paths, different roads. The end destination is the same. So I wanted to end my part by talking about my personal relationship with the practice of Kriya Yoga and my journey into Advaita. And I've had a long conversation with both Gautamji and Santoshma on this. I always felt that the human body, the physical and the subtle body, is nothing like a pipe of water which is supposed to carry water which has gotten clogged. That those blockages, those are nothing but, you know, you can put it like your past karmas. The dust, the dirt, the clunk, that's blocking the flow of the water. So what the breaths did for me is they helped remove the blockages from the pipe so that water can freely flow. With that understanding, why did I get attracted to Advaita? Is because while it took time to blur the lines between me and the self, what I found in Advaita was peace in daily living. You know, the true test of spirituality, and I do speak to Santoshma about it and with Gautamji quite a lot, is not what happens inside in the retreat when we are in a room. It's what happens once the retreat is over and when we go outside living our daily life. That is the true test. How am I living and leading my daily life? Peace and synchronicity and harmony in daily living. That's where for me these two paths come together beautifully and have helped me lead that beautifully.
Beautiful. I feel exactly the same, because Advaita teaches you to witness whatever is happening without wanting something over the other, accepting what is. And in the Kundalini process, any experience that unfolds, because all that is buried will come up. So if you can just witness it, not fight it, right? Knowing that anything that comes and goes is an illusion, it is transient. By and by, things will begin to settle. And the whole process has to bring peace. Like he beautifully pointed out, the Kundalini will move up the chakra system, up the crown, and one has to, eventually, there is abidance in the spiritual heart. So, it is not necessary for all the theater and spiritual experiences to happen. And they are just signposts along the way. Nothing has to be chased. There has to be no attachment to any experience. And that is what Vedanta teaches us. How is the attachment to wanting the luxury cars different from wanting different type of samadhis? It happens by grace. Meditation happens. Samadhi happens. You can't do it. But any samadhi which begins will end. But there is a samadhi which never ends. The spontaneous state of being. The self does not come and go. So the whole kundalini process has to eventually end in the disintegration of the ego structure. There will be times when there is such fear with people going through kundalini awakening, when there is not enough surrender, faith to the guru and the parampara and trusting the shakti. But if the surrender and trust is there, by and by the energy will disintegrate the ego structure. All the vasanas will be exhausted. And mind you, there can be kundalini awakens in every path. Ramana Maharishi ji has clearly said, kundalini is verily the self. You may pass your entire spiritual journey without these phenomenon, and the ego disintegrates. What Ramana Maharishi had was the final experience of kundalini, of ego death. Some people would have so many phenomenon. In my case, my subtle system was quite blocked and had a lot of blockages. People have very clear system, subtle systems. So that experience and theater and phenomenon had nothing to do with spiritual evolution. And make no mistake, people who boast of experiences, I had this vision, that vision, it truly means nothing if there is no peace and their relationships are a mess. More often than not, these experiences can even add to your ego, and then you can behave even nasty with your family and think you're special and get this feeling of entitlement. The whole process has to teach you that Ma, Shakti, Guru, Self is all there is. And this instrument is simply to bow in surrender to that. And that happens by grace. Self-realization happens by grace. You cannot achieve it because you are the Self. It is only the illusions which have to drop.
See, kundalini will push everything that is inside one system. And what is inside our system, what is part of a karmic blueprint, we are not aware. So it'll amplify everything. It'll amplify the good as well as the bad. Your desires as well as your fears. But those are part of the process. They say mind is nothing but a rabbit on a Red Bull. And all systems ultimately want to quieten the mind. Mind and ego. Because that's where the drama comes from. It is important, therefore, whichever practice one takes, and you know, last couple of days we were talking about riding on multiple horses, is to stick to one practice, especially when you do Kriya Yoga, stick to one path. Don't mix and match. Don't keep your feet on multiple ships. Having the presence of a guru and the guru field, and not just in physicality. Why is the lineage important? is because then you know all the people in the lineage and you know what they have achieved, what they have accomplished. You have the power and the shakti of the entire lineage that is there to help and support you. And that's where Guru represents the higher self, the higher consciousness, and helps you to differentiate and distinguish between the I and the me.
That's very beautifully said. Actually, how would the energy rise in the Sushumna in a one-pointed way when the mind is entangled in 10 different paths? Each path goes along a different energetic pathway. It works in a different way. And you are confusing your subtle system with this mixture of practices. It is very important to dig one well deep, then chase different practices and have multiple shallow wells. And also, what is very important to understand, any path, especially the Kundalini path, there will be an initial honeymoon phase where there's all bliss and these experiences. Then, all these things which you beautifully pointed out, all that is buried will be brought to the surface. And Kundalini has a tendency to amplify everything. Those karmas, those blockages are being cleansed. At that point, the mind has a tendency to chase another guru. Now, I want the same bliss. You have to go through the process. So it is not finding different paths, but sticking with one. Because when you are moving to different paths, means there is no faith and surrender in the system. And it is the mind which is chasing this, that. And only with the one-pointed mind, which happens by the grace, witnessing, surrender, will that energy rise beautifully and gently. Otherwise, the subtle system will be ravaged by these energies you can't control. Kundalini is not against you. It is a very divine force. It is the self. So, whether the Kundalini path or any path, when you are in this fear, when you are in resistance, when you are in this need to control, there is misery.
I think we can probably stop at that, and then yes, if you have questions, Gurubhyo Samarpyam.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
First dibs. So thank you both for sharing your experience. It's really, really insightful. I think my question is more around what has it done for you? And on reflection, like how has it changed your life?
So the whole process, especially after meeting Gautamji, when in his guidance there was trust and surrender that the guru field is there, then all the traumas and blockages, when they got clear, it left a relatively quiet mind. Also, people chase these peak experiences in terms of just the extrasensory perception visions. But for me, like he clearly said, the peak experience of Kundalini is peace. And that's my favorite short form I have created, LSD, love, surrender and devotion. So that Kundalini process, it has to expand your heart. It has to fill your heart with love. So in the daily life, once that vacuum cleaning is going by the Divine Mother or the energy, which is the most benevolent force, then as the muck is cleansed, all that remains is peace. And what is very important is not just to do this seated meditation, but be in a state of witnessing and surrender all the time. And the Guru's field will make it happen. And when that happens, the relationships become sweeter. There is less struggle there. And once you learn to surrender to this energy, You're learning to surrender to life situations. So those very important qualities which the process brings makes the daily life beautiful. But if there's chasing of states and boosting of the ego, then the very energy won't give you liberation, peace. For me, many petals are waiting to be unfurled, right? But that energy has brought surrender due to the Guru's grace. And now it is easier to access peace in daily living. So Kundalini's peak experience has to be peace and love, which is the same. Not these experiences, but peace in daily living.
So what you see over a period of time, it changes you and your personality. Where you found yourself getting drawn into conflicts, you become like a tree with very strong roots. No matter how strong the storm is, the branches might be swaying. So on the outside, there is a lot of... But on the inside, you feel you're connected and grounded, and there is that invisible force that supports you. So it's not that problems won't come, you know, flights won't get cancelled and stuff. Karma will still play its part. But within you, you are at peace, and you feel that there is peace and harmony. Those levels start to increase, not just, as I said, with your immediate ones, but all around you.
My question is actually for you, actually both of y'all, since both of y'all had a very different journey towards this. So has the practice dropped now for you that the Kundalini has settled in your heart, or does it continue from time to time?
No, practice is every day. See, one of the things is that mind is a very, very powerful thing. Especially ego, once you... The biggest falls also happen from biggest heights. You can't let go of the daily practice. Because it keeps the connection with the higher self. It keeps your Sahasrara and your Akya open to universal consciousness.
Like a recharge.
It's you're always recharged, and it helps you stay connected. And you see things start to happen. You know, all the blockages, not just within you, but outside of you, also start to kind of slowly, the trust and surrender has to happen. I think in all the practices, if I feel there is something which is missing, and even in my own journey, it's the true surrender. And that's more than any practice. The true surrender is the toughest part, because ego doesn't like to lose. Because once it loses its identity, and then you're gone. So I think that's the true surrender is the toughest thing to achieve. And that's why it's important to stay connected with the practice.
I totally agree with him that integration can take the longest time. And practice word is relevant when there is a doer in place. I feel witnessing situations, allowing the energy to take over, is only happening by Guruji's, Gautamji's grace. So when you know the Guru's grace is only making everything happen, in his case, even the breaths are happening regularly with discipline due to the Guru's grace. So there is no me doing the practice. There is no need to chase something. The Guru's grace is making the practice happen.
It'd be insightful to get a little clarification on multiple paths, because you discussed and we've talked about multiple horses, and Advaita and Gan Yoga is one path, and Kundalini is another path. So, it seems like both of you also are integrating both paths. So is that, I guess, are you saying that's multiple path? Or are you kind of connecting them into one path? Because ultimately, how I understand you saying Kundalini, the ultimate is quiet in the mind, because really ultimately all these practices, the end goal is the quest in mind and destruction of the ego. So you're saying that Kundalini and Advaita and Gan is just together, like it's not, you're not considering that separate?
I wouldn't say that. Look, for me, it happened like that. But what we discussed a couple of days back also, I think it started on day one itself. You have to see where you find your peace. If you find that through Advaita, you are able to practice, because both are practices. One requires physical and verbal practice on a daily basis. The other one is more being aware, being in constant awareness. That's equally a tough practice. How do you, in every interaction and in every situation, be in constant awareness? And I'll give you one example of how does human body and mind work. So let's say I say Seattle or airplane. What comes to your mind? You will see a picture of an airplane, a certain brand. But right now you're not there. You're not in an airport. If I say Seattle, you're not in Seattle. But in your mind, there will be a picture of Seattle, some image. And why? How does that happen? Physically, you're here. Your mind is here. The subtle body works in a manner where the thought to action all happens in a microsecond. It is so subtle that if you try to physically and mentally try and focus on it and control it, it's a very difficult process. So therefore, even Advaita is like a tap. It's a practice which requires you to be in that constant state. So whichever practice you find, you can easily latch on to, and you find that something which you accept, you're able to integrate, that's the practice you choose. Because it should give you results. You should see improvement in daily living. And that's where I fully agree with Gautamji. It's the impact of any practice has to be in daily life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What you said that you do breathing, like typically how long of a practice do you do? Half an hour, or is it varies per day?
For me, it takes me, the total practice in the every morning is about an hour. Now, because I travel so frequently, I'm not able to do all the breaths. But I keep a minimum routine of 15, 20 minutes. If I'm in an airplane, I'll do that. And I'll do my affirmations at least. That's, you know, so that I keep that constant thing. I don't let the ego get back in.
So, Vidyut, I want to ask you, I think you put it very nicely, both of you. After having gone through this experience, do you have to process your mind or condition your mind before any thought comes, or how you're going to react? Do you still have to do it, or is it spontaneous?
It is a lot better now, and I'm able to catch my thoughts. And it could be to anything, right? If I see something on the road which is dirty, the thought will come. But I'm able to catch that. Where did that come from? And slowly and steadily, when I do, over the years, now that I'm doing practice, and I'm able to catch that before it leaves my consciousness. I'm able to see when I react or when I'm engaging with somebody, I have that awareness. See, slowly when the consciousness rises, you're able to catch those clouds of thought. Where is it coming from? Is it me? Is it my past conditioning? Is it some past life thing? And by, that chatter and that difference between the me and the I reduces.
And Kunwar, what about yours? Is it the same?
Yes. See, as the Kundalini cleanses, right, so the reactions settle down because the system becomes refined and witnessing spontaneously happens, I have a feeling that the Kundalini process made witnessing more natural. It was not me trying to witness, me trying to control reactions. By and by, as the vacuum cleaning by the energy and grace is happening, it happens. And one point which he beautifully said was like, can you really separate jnana and bhakti? Eventually, I feel if the settling happens to one guru and parampara, that would be ideal if it is destined. But really, you cannot bifurcate these paths, because first, the guru gives jnana in Advaita that all is the self. And when you see self in everybody, that is seeing God in everybody, that is para bhakti, true bhakti. So then devotion comes for the guru, the form of the guru, which in a bhakti path would come for Ishtadevta. So, and then there are people doing seva to spread the teaching, serving the guru. So jnana, bhakti, karma yoga, you can't really separate these paths. But yes, trying different practices, following different gurus, can actually add confusion to the subtle system and mind both.
So I just wanted to ask, some people are consciously seeking, arousing their Kundalini. For y'all, it's a natural process. So it was not something that you were looking for. So how does that affect y'all, kind of? It's not something we were looking for in this time.
Yes, I feel you should not chase awakening the Kundalini anyways, unless it is a path like maybe a Kundalini Kriya lineage or manual paths. And those two have to be attempted under the guidance of a guru who is following a time-tested method under a guru parampara. The ascending path is not necessarily or inherently bad. It can really help clear blockages, but there has to be the constant guidance of a guru there. The descending energy path is relatively safer, right? And Kundalini awakening, if it spontaneously happens, right? That's a different story. But people trying to try these psychedelics and, you know, doing these ceremonies or trying to do beej mantras, all this, and they're trying it from random YouTube videos without guidance, it is a recipe for disaster. Not that the Kundalini or energy is bad. She is Divine Mother. She is a gentle force. But when there is no guidance, no system, no parampara in place, it is playing with fire.
My mind was looking more.
Personally, this was not something that we were looking for, and it has happened. So kind of, in a way, kind of, did you all ever feel that this is not what we wanted and what is happening, kind of?
So I'll tell you, for me, when I actually did not realize that I had a spontaneous Kundalini awakening. I did not know the word Kundalini till 2021. Whatever was my experience at my childhood, I had forgotten as a nightmare and something that had gone wrong with my body. When I started with the breaths, I still did not know. So what is Kundalini? What does it do? For me, the end goal was, again, I wanted to find more peace and more meaning on who am I, where am I coming from. If I am like this, why am I like this? So it was more that curiosity of understanding that when I behave in certain situations, why do I behave like that? I wanted to understand myself more. That's when I started with the practice of breaths. And my intention was never to focus on awakening Kundalini. It was more about understanding me and myself, right? Understanding who am I. And the rest happened.
Like he beautifully pointed out, some people might think they are going through awakening, and when the ego is in full control, they're spiritually higher than somebody not having the experiences. That is an erroneous belief. People who are not having these experiences, and perhaps their subtle system could be clear, A. B, that surrender could eventually lead in the final experience of ego death. You may pass the entire spiritual journey with very few subtle experiences, and the ego structure might collapse by grace. So anybody having these experiences or samadhi states is not superior to the one who is not. And that's something which is very important to understand.
Even Gautamji says he did not have any experiences when he used to do breaths long time back. And not because that there was no Kundalini Shakti which awakened or not. It's because he didn't have any blocks. He was a clear channel from the very beginning.
Yes.
So not having experiences is not a bad thing. It's actually a blessing that you have no experiences.
Yes. Like, I feel his subtle system was quite clear. There are many people whose subtle system is quite clear and they don't have this theater. There were blockages, so there were experiences. But then the people experiencing these things go on an ego trip. And the people who are not having these subtle experiences want to have that experience, not knowing maybe they're actually much better off and the subtle system is clearer. And eventually the end is the same. Like in many cases, people don't have these experiences. The mind eventually goes through an ego death and there is abidance in the self. But that necessary theater has not happened.
I want to ask, normally a lot of people have this Kundalini process happening when they from meditation, right? But does abruptly stopping your meditation practice leave you in one of those intense, and I'm talking about physical symptoms, like you've described some mental visions. I think they were physical symptoms for me, debilitating symptoms. Does that leave you stuck there? From?
See, normally just with a meditation, Kundalini will not awaken just with one meditation.
This was the intense Vipassana course.
Okay, if you do a course, right, because when you say Vipassana, it is a Kriya. You do a lot more than just sit for meditation. So it will happen that one can get Kundalini awakening. Normally what is advised is if you've done one practice or activity, whether it's you go for inner engineering or if you go for Sri Sri's or any other course, the moment you feel something is happening, you should stick to that, right? And the gurus, if you have access to a guru or somebody who's had the experience, who's knowledgeable, they should be able to help you. And the reason I say so is, for example, in the 8 spiritual breaths, the first 5 breaths are focusing on bringing the solar energy down, descending, because you cleared the agya, the Vishuddhi, the Anahat, you clear the upper part, the Sahasra, right? You bring it down so that this is clear. And then the last 3 breaths are focused on Muladhara, Swadhisthan and Manipur. You bring the energy up. So it's a combination of the two. When you start to experiment with, say, let's say Vipassana or something else, they work on completely different principles. So that's where the trouble happens. So if you have, and this is again for everybody, if one has an experience, and you know what you've done, stick to that. If you don't know, if you've done multiple things, my personal recommendation is always, at least for a year, year and a half, don't do any physical practice.
What I have done is I've run away from the practice. I've not mixed anything because it was too debilitating. I couldn't handle it without medicines. So my question is that I abruptly stopped the practice and maybe I got stuck. Is that a possibility?
It can be a possibility that the energy has risen and it has gone to a channel. But it's not that it stays there forever. That's also the thing. And I started with my childhood experiences that it does settle down and go back. But that requires time. Between 6 months to 18 months, normal time frame, it can be different for different people. But that's the time frame by when it goes back. And slowly and steadily, you have to go back to daily living. Daily mundane living, doing daily activities. I personally have found that when you connect with the Mother Earth, because Kundalini is linked to Mother Earth, when you do gardening and stuff, that helps to calm down and release part of the experiences and some of the challenges one faces. I think we can end on that note. Thank you.